Good morning from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. Welcome to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. I'm your host and garden expert, and I'm here to answer your gardening questions. I am joined by my wonderful producer and great teammate, Lizzie. Good morning, Lizzie.
Good morning. How was your week?
Busy, but really good. Just busy. Kind of, you know, it's kind of chaotic right now, just in general. Mm-hmm. But that's good. Keeps me out of trouble.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
And we are having kind of wonderful weather. I mean, it was really cold last week, and then it got really warm this week with the temperatures, you know, 80 degrees in January. Who would think, you know? And so, but we are going to have a little cold front go through, and I will tell you that the temperatures in North Florida, we're going to start to see, 50s as high, 60s, low 60s, and then lows on Monday should be in the 30s, and then the rest of the week, the lows will be in the 40s. So typical winter weather for us for the North. And then South Florida is going to be beautiful with 80s during the week, during the day, and then 50s. At night. So it's going to have that cold front go through, and then it'll be like 70s during the day.
So what you're saying is we should be a snowbird this week and should go a little bit further south.
It's going to be a little bit lower. The Central Florida is going to have low temperatures. And so it's going to be a little bit colder than average. And so, but the sun's going to shine. We're going to have a little bit of rain this weekend, but not a lot. And it's just going to be beautiful gardening weather.
Do you think it's going to freeze at all?
No. Nowhere. Not even in North Florida. No, it's going to be a very mild cold front. A little bit of rain. Melbourne and the East Coast had a little bit of rain this morning and could be getting a little bit of showers now. So we need it all. So that just helps us from having to irrigate. And, you know, it's just, I just need to say, talked to several people this week and only water once a week right now, if you need to. Literally just look at your plants, and if they're doing fine,
yeah,
there's no reason to water for a couple of weeks.
I haven't had to water my stuff probably since almost like November-ish.
We had a really good December rainfall, and which is unusual, but it's because of El Nino.
Yes.
And so we appreciate El Nino when we have it. And so it is going to be a great day. Now, Lizzie, do you know what a croton is?
I've heard the name.
A croton is a member of the euphorbia family, which I don't necessarily kind of think about because euphorbias have that white milky sap substance in there. And so I don't think of crotons as being euphorbias really, but I guess they are. They are native to the tropics and subtropics of South America. And it includes 1,150 accepted species, over 1,000 accepted species of crotons. Now, we just see the mamey in the nursery. We see it maybe sometimes a little bit of the painter's brush and just a few different types, Petra crotons, but there's over 1,000 different varieties. And so it has been, it was documented first in the 18th century. It is one of the largest and most complex plants in Madagascar, where on the Madagascar island, they only have, or they have 150 different croton species.
Oh, wow.
That are endemic to that island. So it's really pretty cool. It also, it has the latex, where it's called dragon's blood, that the croton sap is kind of like a liquid bandage.
Ooh.
So I guess that's where that sap comes from. But here's what I didn't know, because we're going to be talking about crotons today. Crotons and blueberries. And the bark is used to flavor the liqueur Campari and vermouth.
Oh,
so our drinking buddies out there will know what Campari and vermouth
are. There you go.
But crotons, the bark is used in that. And it's also a biofuel. So think about that. It fuels, it makes liquor.
It not only fuels you.
but it could be a good source of biofuels. And then also, too, it's a native moth attractor. So it is a larva host plant for the Cinchina citronella moth, which is native to Arizona, California, Colorado, Kansas, Nebraska, Nevada, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Texas, Utah, and northern Mexico. So it's got a fascinating history and global impact. We are going to be talking to one of the most incredible Croton growers and collectors in the country. And Mark Peters is, he used to come on my show when it was In Your Backyard on WLBE. So I've known Mark a long time, has the most fascinating collection of Crotons. He's going to come on and he's going to tell us a little bit about how we can grow them and make sure that they're nice and healthy. But he is going to be visiting a lot of areas and plant sales in Florida this for the next spring season.
Right. And we also should bring up, because Crotons are poisonous, question mark. So don't go out and chew on one, because we were talking about it being used for vermouth. So.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah, no, yeah.
I'm being serious.
No, I am too. And that's a good point. And I am haven't had all my cup of tea this morning yet, so I'm not quite awake. But that is a good point. Yes, don't eat anything, okay,
that you're
growing
about.
In your yard with that you don't know about.
Right.
And so, you know, if anything, it's going to just make you sick. We want to keep you around, though, so don't be eating anything. I just thought that was fascinating that this plant mm-hmm. that we just grow in all the stores has so many different variety of uses in the world. And
I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. And so coming up next is Mark Peters. We also have Dr. Jeff Williamson, who is a blueberry specialist with the University of Florida. He'll be in our second hour from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. Mark began his career at the legendary White Flower Farm, which has one of the most wonderful flower catalogs. And then he also worked at the historic in Boston Forest Hills Cemetery. He was VP of the Horticulture and Living Collections at the New York Botanical Gardens. So he has been increasingly at the most exciting gardens area. And he became fascinated with growing orchids in his bathtub. Isn't that just like all of us? I mean, that's...
right? Yeah, that's me 100%.
And so he met his wife at the New York Botanical Gardens, and they moved to South Florida, where Mark was introduced to tropicals. And we'll talk a little bit about that. I am excited to have him with us this morning. He is a great plant collector, great enthusiast as far as, giving his education and his knowledge out. Good morning, Mark. How are you today?
I'm great. Good morning to you.
I am so glad to have you on. It's been a while. You used to come on WLBE for me, and I'm so glad we are talking this morning. And so where are you located right now?
Our nursery is in Vero Beach, Florida.
Okay. And so you are down there this morning, and the weather has been beautiful this week for you. Now, so in Vero Beach, South Florida, you have your tropical nursery where you're growing crotons and cordylines, which are the Hawaiian Thai type of plant. How did you get started collecting so many of these beautiful tropicals?
Well, when Deirdre and I moved to South Florida in 2003, I was working at McKee Botanical Garden, and we had some beautiful old historic crotons at that garden, and then I also got exposed to them as I traveled around to the various nurseries that were specializing in different groups of tropical plants, palms, orchids, bromeliads, and some of them were carrying 15, 20, 30 different kinds of crotons, and I just fell in love.
Oh, that's so true. There's so many different varieties. Now, for those of you listening who don't know what a croton is, this is the plant you see being sold in the tropical plant sections of nurseries and box stores that are orange, black, and yellow, red. There's so many different varieties, Mark. How many do you grow?
Well, that was one of the things that attracted me to Croton's, was the fact that there were so many different varieties. When you really dive deep into it, and at that time there was a Croton Society, you would go to various Croton collectors' gardens and you would see 50, 75, 100 different varieties. And it was a swap meet. We were swapping Croton's, and it was just amazing how many different varieties. Right now, there's approximately 675 varieties in cultivation, but some of them are extremely rare and hard to find and very expensive. People will spend hundreds of dollars at the Croton swaps for rare Crotons.
Wow. And they're sold all over the world. I was looking at a map of where they're grown, where you can find them at, on the Kew Gardens website. And they're just in nearly every country of the world you can find them.
Well, as long as they have greenhouses and they can grow them in a tropical environment, they are very easy to raise. And some of them are very adaptable to indoor cultivation, whether it be your house or your office or your hotel. That's how I got first exposed to them back in the 80s in Hartford, Connecticut, as an interior landscaper, using Crotons as a colorful item in the tropical beds.
I do love them too as well. Now, for people growing them, I've seen some that are kind of faded in the full sun, and then some that are thriving in shade. What should they be grown? What kind of site conditions should you have for a Croton?
Well, the truth is, although there are some that are very adaptable to full sun, like Petra and Mammy, most of the rare ones and the really beautiful ones and the ones with large, large leaves are ideal in dappled sun, filtered light. I say they're 50-50 plants, especially between the hours of 11 and 3. They just can't take the hot burning sun. Another factor to consider is their water and irrigation. Sometimes they will adapt if they have plenty of water and irrigation, but if you start letting them dry out in sun, they will wilt and not perform well.
What kind of cold temperatures can they take? Because we're here in Central Florida in zone, well, it's supposed to be 10B, but, you know, 9B, 10B, you know, what kind of cold can they take?
Well, the absolute zero line is 32 degrees, but some of them will start to suffer even at 40 degrees. So ideally, you want to protect them below 40 degrees.
So
if they've been through cold before, they will adapt better. But young plants especially need a little extra protection below 40.
Okay, that's good to know. So I saw the phrase Croton trees. What is a Croton tree?
Well, a tree or a standard is any plant that is trained from a very young cutting age to grow as a singular plant straight up, like a jack and beanstalk.
Mm-hmm.
But here we're only growing them 3 or 4 or 5 feet. You see hibiscus grown as trees and other tropical shrubs grown as trees, and they're called standards. You can do the same thing with the Croton and have beautiful little trees. I've seen them where they have 3, 4, 5-inch stems.
Wow.
Across and 7 feet high, 5 feet across, and they're just beautiful.
That would be very striking to see, especially with those colors. You don't get a lot of plants that have that really striking black and red and yellow and orange, all of the same plant. And so what is your favorite Crotons? Do you have any of the unusual ones?
Well, one of my favorites is Polychrome. It's a beautiful yellow and pink. There's another one called Rudy Bachman. There are many of them that are named after the hybridizers like Rudy Bachman, and they're just absolutely beautiful. They make you want to drop to your knees. Mother Nature is so beautiful and so creative. It's just amazing when you see these beautiful plants.
I'm going to look that one up because I just think the Rudy Bachman sounds amazing with the pink. That would be fascinating. Yeah. So switching over to cordylines, now everybody recognizes the pink and burgundy Hawaiian tie, also called Red Sisters. What other combinations of cordylines do you sell?
Well, most of these are large leafed shade growing plants. They usually grow quite tall, but there are some dwarfs that have very small leaves, 2, 3, 4 inches across, but there's also some that have very large leaves, a foot or a foot and a half. They come in white, pink, burgundy, yellow, orange. Orange is a very, very unusual but desirable color. There's several that have orange tints to their leaves. And these are back-of-the-border plants. These are going to get tall. The best way to treat them is to trim them. Singular stems once a year, the tallest stem, cut it back about halfway, and it will branch, and your plant will be full and bushy instead of tall and leggy.
That's a great bit of advice. People are afraid to cut their plants, so I'm glad you said that.
It's mandatory. It's not optional. I tell people it's not if they should, it's when they should.
Excellent. Oh, I'm so glad you said that, Mark. Okay, so now you're having all your spring sales coming up. I first saw you at Lou Gardens plant sale. So tell me, where are you going to be today, and where can people find where you're going to be at other sales? Because I know collectors and people new to Florida that would like to start collecting the crotons and cordylines want to meet you.
Well, we're very, very lucky in the state of Florida having this tropical environment, because there are so many beautiful botanical gardens from Orlando South. There's probably 15 or 20 major gardens that have plant sales, and these are the sales where people really go to see the best and the brightest of all the different plant groups. Doesn't matter what it is, but if it's a tropical plant, you can find it at a botanical garden plant sale. And one right here in our neighborhood in the Vero Beach area is at Port St. Lucie Botanical Garden this weekend, and we're attending that.
Oh, that's wonderful. So I will give that out, Port St. Lucie Botanical Gardens. You're going to be there today and tomorrow, January 27th. Saturday and Sunday, and that's going to be 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. today, and then 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. tomorrow. And so
9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at the thing. There you go. My eyes. I'm sorry, Mark.
Right.
So 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Coming up further, we have Garden Fest, which is held by the Garden Club of Indian River County. That's next weekend. Mounts Botanical Garden in West Palm has two of them this spring, one in February, one in April. Jensen Beach Garden Club, Downtown Melbourne Botanical sale. Oh, there's a whole list of them from all over the East Coast that we're attending. And they're on our website. Peter's Croton Nursery is where you will find the listing of all the plant sales that we're attending.
That's great. And I will be posting this on our Facebook page and social media, Mark, for you. So that is really great. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. Enjoy the beautiful weather down there. And just let me know if you get really, really, really some very cool exotic crotons. I would love to come down and see them.
Sure will.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you for having
me. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for being on. That's Mark Peters, and his website is peterscrotonnursery.com. peterscrotonnursery.com. And I will be posting it on Facebook this afternoon. And get out and see him. He's going to be at the Port St. Lucie Botanical Gardens today and tomorrow. That's 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. today and 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. tomorrow. And I'm going to be posting the pictures of the crotons that I've taken over the years at his nursery, and they are just magnificent. I can't tell you, an orange Hawaiian tie, an orange cordyline,
gorgeous,
would be phenomenal. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, if it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. I want to say thank you to Mark Peters of PetersCrotonNursery.com. He's down in Vero Beach. Go out and see all of his beautiful and unusual tropical crotons and cordylines. They will blow your mind. If you do not have a croton collection now, when you see all the different varieties, you're going to want to start one. And so big thank you to that. I want to say now's the time for everyone who has a gardening question. You can call and let us know what it is, and we'll try and help you with it. Also, too, if you're texting, we've already heard from several this morning, like Linda and Mark and Michael. And so go ahead and give us a call, 1-888-455-2967, or text 23680. And if you'll give us your name and location when you text, we'll be able to answer your question a little bit easier, make sure it's correct information. So what should you be doing right now in your garden? Well, I will tell you, as warm as it has been, this is a time to start cutting back your ornamental grasses. Now, I so appreciate Mark saying it is not just a suggestion to cut some of your plant varieties back in your yard. It's mandatory. And one of those is not only your Hawaiian ties and sometimes crotons, but also your ornamental grasses, especially the fountain grasses variety. In South Florida, you can start cutting them back now in January and February. And then in North and Central Florida, because we could get some freezes coming up in February and March, the last freeze date is usually right around March 15th. You can start cutting back the ornamental grasses in North Florida in February and March then. But right now in South Florida, you can go ahead and cut them back, especially if they're flowering. Those flowers probably have already faded back because usually they flower in the fall. And so if you had them blooming in the fall, go ahead and cut them back. All right, so that's important. We need to do that with plants, especially because they get leggy. Also, the miscanthus, which is a wonderful ornamental grass, fronds can be removed. The old foliage can be removed with a chainsaw or a hedge shears. And for evergreen grasses like Fakahatchee grass, the ragged dead leaves can be removed by combing the grass with a pitchfork or a really, really thick pronged rake. Okay, that'll make it a little bit easier. Your pampas grasses, you're going to want to be a little bit careful with because they have the sharp fronds, the razor-like fronds. And so that will be a good chore for you to do this week. Let's go to Joe from Orlando. Good morning. How can I help you, Joe?
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I'm an old guy, and I've got an old landscape in the front yard of boxwoods, azaleas, crepe myrtles that are not slaughtered.
Good for you. Yeah.
So I have a work team coming, and this is a very mature landscape of 55-plus years.
Wow.
And I don't have the money nor the inclination to tear it all out and start over again.
I don't want you to do that.
No. So we have a work team coming from our church in a couple of weeks, and they're going to get down on their hands and knees and pull weeds and out of the flower beds and out of these the area of boxwoods and azaleas,
mm-hmm.
and the vines and all that stuff.
Okay.
And then I was going to lay down a layer of about, as I hear you say, about 5 inches of mulch.
Okay.
Do I need to prep that ground with poison or anything before putting the mulch down?
No. Once they hand pull it, which is kind of the best way to do it when you have such a mature landscape, you only need to put down about 3 inches of mulch. Okay,
3 inches.
That'll save you a little bit of money. And no, there's no reason to put down a chemical if you have gotten it all out. And then what you want to do is just stay on top of it once you have your team, you know, clearing it all. Then just go out once a week and just start to pull them, because even if you remove them all, birds, the wind, traffic from cars will blow weed seeds into your yard. And so, you know, you just want to stay on top of it. But that sounds, don't tell anybody what church you go to, because that church will have a tremendous amount of membership joining so they can get their lawns taken care of. And so that's a really nice, generous effort there for you. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I said, no, I don't want anybody to have to come down on their hands and knees and pull weeds. And they said, that's what we do.
Oh, that's great. That's
so
wonderful.
That's a wonderful thing. We're blessed for that. And anyway, I appreciate so much your information on how to do that.
Well, thank you so much. Just 3 inches of mulch, and just make sure they get it all, and then just stay on top of it. Thank you so much, Joe.
Beautiful. Thank you. Have a beautiful day.
You too, hon. That is so sweet, isn't it, to go out there and volunteer to take care of somebody's yard.
That, you know, and that's good to hear, especially all the stuff that's going on, craziness in the world. So it's good to hear that people are coming together to help those that are unable to do it at that moment. And so, because, you know, I'm a true believer, it's going to come right back around, because you may be in that same situation.
Certainly agree with you. That
help,
is really
help each other out.
It is. It's nice. 1-888-455-2967. If you're in the garden area, we'd love to talk with you and find out what's growing in your garden. I had a wonderful experience of visiting a client's yard, and they love gardens and they love to garden, and they had a beautiful jade plant. And these are really huge jade plants. Now, jade plant is a succulent. And it's almost bonsai-like.
Okay.
Okay, the leaves are round and very fleshy, and it's a wonderful evergreen plant that goes well in containers. It can freeze out, so we don't put it in the ground necessarily, but it can get big. Well, they have two big, beautiful ones, and one of them is blooming.
Oh, really?
And I was really shocked to see it, because it's very rare in Florida to see a jade plant blooming, because when the plants have a lot of humidity around them, that's not conducive to them blooming. So I will be posting pictures of that on our Facebook page.
Okay.
And so when you go on our Facebook page, like us, that we would love for you to do that. And you can also hear all the podcasts. I post them always Saturday afternoons on our Facebook page. And then you can hear the shows if you missed any part of it. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, it's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. You can give us a garden call, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. So we had a call from George, text message from George in Polk City. It says, how do I eliminate torpedo grass from my beds? And George, that's very, very difficult. And so what you can do, there is a product out there called Fusilade, and it is it can be used to get rid of torpedo grass, but you're going to have to be very, very careful that you don't get it on any of the plants. So I would like to know kind of what kind of plants you have in your garden bed. Most of the time, if you will just keep it away, and you could literally just even brush the Fusilade on the grass so that you don't have to spray it on a windy day and it gets on your other plants. Be very, very careful, but the product is called Fusilade, and read the label, follow the instructions. The label is the law. And so thank you so much for that text message. And then let's go to, Lizzie. Jim, let's go to Jim. Good morning, Jim. Thank you for calling Better Lawns and Gardens.
Well, good morning. I have a 7-8-year-old big lychee tree in my yard.
Okay.
And last year, it was just covered with lychees. And for some reason, we only got like 9 off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want that to happen this year. We can only say that there was a web a little web-type thing in the tree, but we never saw a spider. I wondered what we should spray it with and when we should be doing that. There's no fruit right now, mm-hmm. but you can see where it's going to be coming.
Okay, and so how tall is it?
Oh, it's at least 10 feet tall.
10 feet tall. All right, and so if you're getting the spider webs, then you need to use a product. Now, do you have spider webs on it now?
No.
Okay, so I don't want you to do anything until you see signs and symptoms of an insect issue, okay? Because there's no reason to, you know, spray a chemical if you don't have the problem. And you may not have it this year. So you had it last year, so you want to be very aware of it. Go out and check every week and look underneath the label or underneath the leaves and look all over the branches to see if it's starting again. And once you find them, then you can use a product that is good for aphids and also spiders, and that would be your bio-advanced products, okay? And I would do it for fruit trees. You want to specifically get a chemical that is appropriate and labeled for use on fruit trees. And bio-advanced has several of them.
Bio-advanced,
and look for the fruit and trees, nut trees and fruits and vegetables label, okay? And then use that, follow the instructions. But you don't need to do it unless you have a problem, and just because you had them last year doesn't mean you will. Now, how often do you water it?
Not at all.
Okay, well, that's fine right now. But with the temperatures, you can water once a week. So I want you to keep the lychee tree as healthy as possible. So you don't want it to go into stress mode, because when plants are in stress mode, then they are more attractive and susceptible to insects. So make sure you're watering on that we're getting rainfall, or you can supplement water when the temperatures are averaging 75, 80 degrees once a week. Okay. Don't let it get into stress, and because that's going to be the main reason why it will get it.
Okay. In advance. Is the
Bio-advanced.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right. Let me know if you get them. I would be interested in finding out. And so we're going to Susan in Vieira. How can you get rid of a pesky woodpecker? He's killing my beautiful royal poinsettia tree. I hung CDs, and I'll let you know if that works. Okay, please do, Susan. What can I do? I have bird feeders under the trees. I plan to move them to the back of the property. That's going to be a big portion of it. You don't want to attract birds to a tree with bird feeders. So you want to move them away from the tree that you're trying to protect. Now, what the issue could be, though, is I want you to check the health of your royal poinsettia tree, because they are coming after a food source. And if you have insects inside your tree, then the woodpeckers are going to go towards that food source. So one, check the health of your royal poinsettia. You may want to have a certified arborist come out and look at it and make sure that your tree is healthy and not declining. The woodpecker wouldn't necessarily cause your tree to decline. It's just a symptom. It means that there's insects there that the woodpecker can, eat. And so that's going to be a symptom. It's not the cause of the problem. And then move those bird feeders away. Please do. So you want to move them to the back of the yard and encourage the woodpeckers to go to the backyard. All right. And then you could also hang wind chimes in the areas, maybe two wind chimes in the trees. And that will kind of deter them too as well, Susan. Great question. Let's go to the text message. Is sand okay to put on bold spots in lawn St. Augustine grass? And so I don't know what you mean by bold spots, or do you mean bare spots? And I don't know if I'm getting that correctly. You know, you can put sand on St. Augustine grass very lightly if you want to build up some areas if it's unlevel. And you can do that. I don't know what you mean by bold, though. And then also it says, what to spray on pygmy trees and holly trees that get blue mold. I tried and scrubbed them, but it comes back. Well, mold is an issue of watering and humidity. And so I would find out, I would look at what time you're watering at and how often you're watering it. You want to have good air circulation. You don't want to be watering in the nighttime as far as like 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. You want to water after 3 to 4 o'clock in the morning. And how long are you watering it for? So I would check those things first. And then if you know you're getting a mold issue all the time, you can put down a fungicide, and that will prevent the mold from happening. So check that out. All right, let's go to Carol in Lakeland. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning, Teresa. Thanks for being there for us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for listening to Better Lawns and Gardens.
A while back, I started a worm farm on my back porch just in a little Rubbermaid container.
Okay.
And I got some red wigglers from Peterson's Nursery, and I followed all the directions from YouTube. But now that they've done their thing, or in a month or so, I want to know what to do with them. I mean, they can't survive out in the yard by themselves. I have to separate their scat from I don't know what to do with them.
Okay. Well, first you want to, what kind of bin do you have them in?
I've got them in a Rubbermaid container,
Okay. So, laundry baskets that have holes in them and things like that, and you can put holes in the bottom of the bin. You want to have your worm farm so that you can put their nesting and food sources into the soil, but you want I've forgotten the words now. There we go. To fall through the holes in the bottom. So, you know, if you will email me, I will send you how to do a worm composting bin so that you can just pick it up and all of the good worm droppings will fall through, and you just change it out, and you can put that in your compost pile or put it out in your yard. So email me, teresa.watkins@live.com, and I will send you that, okay? And then you'll know what to do with it. And you can just keep them growing in the same bins all the time. You just change out the bottom. Okay, kind of like a flow-through kitty litter box.
There you go. Okay, all right, thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. That's teresa.watkins@live.com. And we would like to thank Mark Peters for coming on today and growing the most beautiful, beautiful crotons and cordylines, the Red Sisters tropical plants. He is going to be at the plant sale at Port St. Lucie Botanical Garden today and tomorrow. You can check him out at peterscrotonnursery.com. peterscrotonnursery.com, and that's all one word. And so we like to thank our callers. We're going to get to the bare spots in the St. Augustine lawn. So, George, the bare spots, I would plug the bare spots and not put sand in it. I would go ahead and make sure that if you've got an area in your St. Augustine grass that's nice and thick, go ahead and cut a little bit of it and make your own plugs. And you don't want bare spots in St. Augustine lawn. We've got a great guest coming up, and it's Dr. Jeffrey Williamson. He is a blueberry specialist. He's going to tell us how to grow wonderful blueberries. Did you know they're native to Florida?
Yes.
And they do very well here. So, thank you so much for listening to the first hour. We have the second hour coming up from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
Want to know how to win $1,000? We're giving away $1,000 weekdays starting at 9 a.m. on WFLA Orlando. Go to our website, WFLAOrlando.com, and check out all the details there for our cash contest.